हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 103, chapter 70. Or we carry the burden of happiness of enjoying as kings. We have given up the indescribable happiness in the heart, or our sarup, derived from your lotus feet, and suffer in this world, which is ornamented by your appearance. Or, not only from Jarasandha, but by your maya, we are always suffering. Or, we make Jarasandha suffer through our suffering. We always suffer because of our faults. So in other words, we've made the faults by which we're suffering. It's not that someone else is making them. Others may be the medium through which we receive. But that doesn't mean that that's the source. Just like, let's say at a job, you get paid. Right? Now, who writes the check or who gives the money is not the guy who's actually, you know, you're working for. So does that mean now he's the source, so you have to please that guy, the cashier, you know, you have to make him happy, then you'll get your money and like that. So the whole point is that whatever we're getting comes through someone. But it doesn't mean that its origin is not ourselves. As they're pointing out, we're enjoying as kings, or we've given up the happiness in the spiritual world, come to the material world, and therefore we're suffering like that. Or it means not only from Jarasandha are we suffering, but from being in Maya we're suffering. Or is that we're suffering, and from that we're also making Jarasandha suffering. Whatever it is, it's all, you know, we're an instrument for him suffering, he's an instrument for our suffering. You know, we're all here together, all, you know, helping each other suffer, you know, like that. Yes. The king's concluded. Therefore, since your lotus feet, since your feet relieve the sorrow of those who surrender to them, please release us prisoners from the shackles of karma. Manifest as the king of Magadha. Right? Because it's that they're trying to be freed from being attached to the material world, and therefore that control, that suffering that comes from that. But it's in the form here as the king of Magadha, of Jarasandha. But it's actually they want to be freed from this material consciousness.
Here we see the king, they accept responsibility for their own suffering and then they pray to Krishna.
Yes.
But what is the result of someone who don't accept responsibility and who is praying to Krishna?
At least you're connecting to Krishna, and so there'll be some advancement until you understand, you know, what's going on. It means if you can just absorb yourself in Krishna completely, then that'll work. But generally speaking, as sadhakas, then what slows down our process, so this, you know, is the anartas. And so to remove those, we have to be aware that they're there. It's not a focus on them. They don't become a major aspect. It's just that we have to be aware as they go that we're willing to let them go. Because otherwise, if we're attached to them, then they don't go so well.
Can we say that? In order to speed, we need to accept responsibility for our...
Yes, but that responsibility means that we have made a... That responsibility is we've turned our attention from Krishna to the material energy.
Yes.
That's the cause. Not that, oh, I did this and I did that and I'm such a rat bag. No, that kind of thing, that's not useful.
Yes.
It's that the lamentation is that I've turned my back on Krishna and given up devotional service. That's what's the lamentation.
Yes. Yes.
Not that I did this and I did that.
Yes. Yes.
You know, because if we do that, we just get into ignorance.
Yes.
Modern justice wants you to do the secondary thing because they think that's real. But that's an illusion because, as Krishna says in the Gita, the soul neither kills nor is killed. So it's the modes of nature do all this. But you identify with it, that's why you get the result. But you didn't do it. So anybody says, no, he did this, he has to be punished for that, means they don't understand the philosophy at all. It means zero. They don't even get past the first, 15 verses of Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. You know what I'm saying? Let alone any further. So it's just, it means you're not doing it, but you identify with it. So as it goes on, you think it's you. You know, it's just like, you make the choice to get on the train. And then you say, yeah, now we're going through the Alps, and now I'm going through the Alps, now I'm doing this, now I'm doing that, now we've stopped here. But you're not doing that, the train's doing that. You know what I'm saying? So then, then we say, oh, but you went through the Alps, that's nonsense, you shouldn't do that. So then, but the train went through there, so what are they talking about? Does that make sense? Now, if they complain, why you got on that train, now that's a valid point. But they can't complain about what's going on during that. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is we ourselves identify with it, so we identify others with it. When we don't identify with it, we don't identify others with it. We just see the consciousness that the soul has gotten them into. Therefore, here's the symptoms of the secondary, but that's not the point. The point is to change the consciousness, that'll all go away. It means identifying with it, all that doesn't go away. You will get every last bit of karma that's your due. But if you surrender to Krishna and all that, then all that being an illusion that you're not doing that, it just goes away. That's the point of Krishna karma. There's no need for a reaction because it means the soul didn't do it in the first place. Does that make sense? You had something?
I just thought it was interesting, this last philosophical school we were reading about, how much unnecessary suffering they accept, because they don't accept, like Krishna says, that the individual is responsible for his own suffering.
Yes.
And you see the kings here who accept that.
Yes.
The difference between the two.
Yes, yes. And so that's why the stories in the Bhagavatam of them and the story of these others is not. you might come up in a discussion in 11th canto or 3rd canto, in the Gitas or in Bhagavad Gita, but it doesn't even necessarily refer to them by name, just the particular aspect that is there. Sometimes they do, but generally not. But here, they're doing the correct thing, so that's why it's glorified and remembered. Yes.
Just trying to get connections. So they are approaching Krishna. Still they understand they are suffering because of their faults, but still they are approaching Krishna to help them, and Krishna will solve the situation.
Yes, but in solving it, he's removing their attachment to karma. That's what they're praying for, but it's in the form of Jarasandha's has them imprisoned. But in actuality, they want to be freed from material entanglement.
From the fear. Actually, they mentioned, I think, from the fear.
Yeah. Yeah, because fear means to identify with it. If you don't identify, what's the fear? I'm going to drop this. No, anything but that. You don't identify with it, who cares? Right? But if I pull out something that's important to you and say I'm going to drop it, then okay, let's talk. Yeah.
iPhone,
yes.
So, in that connection, when somebody approaches another one for help, so that person, is it like properly, he says, oh no, you should suffer, it's your fault,
So you don't approach them. And people that say that, you don't approach them. You approach them who actually understand and can help. Because the point is, it's not that we've done, so therefore you suffer. It's a matter of how you because is that the solution? By suffering, that does that solve the problem? Because if that solves the problem, then all the people in the world should be, Paramahamsas by now. You know? But it doesn't solve the problem. It's only by becoming God-conscious that solves the problem. So that's why they make this point.
It means that person, he's not qualified to remove that fear.
No. Because he's thinking that you did the wrong, you deserve it. Now, if it's a matter of, he told you before, don't do that, it's not a Krishna conscious thing, and by doing that, you'll disturb your Krishna consciousness and you'll be suffering. And then you come back later, oh, I'm suffering from this, can you help me? And then it's kind of, well, no, you did it, you enjoy. You know, then you could say that. You know, but the point is that only Krishna consciousness solves any material problem. There is no material solution for any material problem. It doesn't exist. People try to say it does. Especially now, by proper knowledge and skills and all that, you can solve all suffering. But that's totally bogus. Because it's only the consciousness will solve. Even if you materially have everything perfect, you still are not happy. Because otherwise, the demigods should be happy, right? But as we see from when Gopakumar visited them, when Brihaspati and the sages came down and all that, they respected them, they dealt with them nicely and that. But then when they left, they were actually jealous of them. Because they're going to a higher place than them, they're more powerful, they have to respect them. You know, so they've gone to the heavenly planets to get respect, to get the position, to get that like that, but there's something higher. So that's the problem, is that they're always... The material world means you will have all these different problems. You know. Right? Yeah. You know, because you want the six opulences, then you get all those six, what do you call it? Disturbances. They just come together. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Same packet.
Yes, the packet. Yeah,
packet of 12.
Huh? Yeah, packet of 12. Yeah. It all goes together. Okay. Well, the king's concluded. Oh, that. No.
The king's concluded.
Concluded.
No. The king's concluded.
We didn't read that. We didn't read that.
Oh, okay. Therefore, since your feet relieve the sorrow of those who surrender to them, please release us prisoners from the shackles of karma manifest as the king of Magadha. Wielding alone the prowess of 10,000 maddened elephants, he has locked us up in his house just as a lion captures sheep. O wielder of the disc, your strength is unlimited, and thus 17 times you crushed Jarasandha in battle. But then, absorbed in human affairs, you allowed him to defeat you once. Now he is so filled with pride that he dares to torment us, your subjects. O unconquerable one, please rectify this situation. The messenger concluded, this is the message of the kings imprisoned by Jarasandha, who all hanker for your audience, having surrendered to your feet. Please bestow good fortune on these poor souls. Verses 32 to 47. Narad Muni praises Krishna and communicates King Yudhishthira's message. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the king's messenger had thus spoken, the sage of the demigods Narada suddenly appeared, bearing a mass of golden matted locks on his head. The supremely effulgent sage entered like a brilliant sun. Now that's something unique, right? Because generally when you see people with dreads, they're always brown, right? But these ones are golden, right? So, have you ever seen blonde dreads? No? No. You think? Yeah? The peroxide or natural?
Natural.
Oh, okay. So that's some, yeah. The supremely effulgent sage entered like the brilliant sun. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, when the messenger of the kings was speaking in this way, Evam, and the Lord did not say anything in response, Narada appeared so that the Lord would first go to Yudhishthira's house. Narada was shining or had great power and had golden hair. Right. So now if he doesn't come, then he has to address the kings. But to address them, then it won't be complete unless he goes to Yudhishthira's place, because he'll go and rectify the situation, but how means those devotees will get the benefit, but great devotees like Yudhishthira wouldn't. Right? So by going to Yudhishthira's place, and then as an arrangement for the Rajasuya, now they go and conquer Jarasandha. Now it becomes part of the arrangement for the Rajasuya. So then you get both done. Well, the one, you get one done, not the other, but with this, with the Rajasuya, you get both done. right? Does that make sense? He was like the sun. In this way appeared in order that by showing his nature, his words would be accepted. Right? So he came, you know, effulgent and like this, so then, you know, they would naturally pay attention to his position. Or he was joyful that his desire, Rajasuya sacrifice, would be performed when the Lord came to Yudhishthira's house. Right? So being joyful, therefore he's effulgent and everything. Or Sukadeva describes him in this way because he is filled with bhakti for him, since he came there on behalf of Yudhishthira. So then Sukadeva describes him in this way because he has that devotion towards Narad Muni, because he's representing Maharaj Yudhishthira. Mm-hmm. Or Narada is radiant with great power of austerity, parama dyutihi. This indicates his omniscience. Knowing the Lord would go to Yudhishthira's house, he came here to hasten the event. The power of his austerity is indicated by his shining hair. He was like the sun, most powerful or most worthy of worship. Right. No, but he has golden hair. Kapila Muni has golden hair. So the tawny hair, you see, the Lord may do it in these situations like that, but in the general, it's not considered your ideal hair color like that. Unless you want to throw in very tall and blue eyes also like that, so that's some consider that the perfection. But the principles they have this, and that's just their uniqueness. Right? Otherwise, the black hair is considered the standard, like that, and tawny hair is not considered like that. It gives another nature. Like, so for them being transcendental, it doesn't affect. It just is an attractive feature. But we see here, then it's an attractive feature, but you don't have. Other than the hair, you don't have a lot happening. Yes, that's why so many jokes. You know? Yeah, there's no brunette or black haired jokes. Right? So here you see they're all transcendental, so it doesn't matter. Right? So then if you have someone who's not transcendental and not connected with reality, then it's a problem. Yeah, it's all very nice. You know, so that's the thing. It has its purpose, and it works very well in those areas. But it's not your standard. It's not standard issue. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Lord Krishna is the worshipable master of even planetary rulers like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Yet, as soon as he saw that Narad Muni had arrived, he joyfully stood up along with his ministers and secretaries to receive the great sage and offer his respectful obeisances by bowing his head. After Narada had accepted the seat offered to him, Lord Krishna honored the sage according to scriptural injunctions and, gratifying him with his reverence, spoke the following truthful and pleasing words. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, he worshipped him according to the rules, starting with welcome, swagatam, and ending with niranjana, artik. He spoke affectionately, shradhaya, with truthful words. Right? So that means you start with swagatam, means asanam. He gave him welcoming, gives him a seat. They wash the feet. There's the argya, there's the madhuparka. You know, these aspects like that. Then you go into the niranjana, so then the offering, you know, the garlands will be given, scents will be given. Then, lamps and incense, all those things will be offered. So that's just your standard worship. That's just how it is. So they only have to say standard because people know what the standard is.
You discussed earlier also that how the Shola Shukchar is being executed even for the great personality.
Yes. So, like that. Yes. Or satisfied him with his faith since he was most worthy of worship, Munim. Right, so because he dealt with them properly, so this is the way to deal. So he did like that. So we see in this formal situation, Narad Muni doesn't have a problem that he dealt like this. But in the informal situation, then it's uncomfortable, like because he's a Brahmin, he's a sage, you know. Here are the kings, They're like that, so then therefore they interact like that. But then when it's Krishna and then he sees himself as the devotee, then it's more of a difficulty for Narada. That's why he didn't stay so long, you know, visiting the palaces of Krishna. Like that. Long enough to see everything, because Krishna showed him what activities would happen throughout the day and on for any day of the year. So he saw everything at once. Like that, so he fulfilled his desire, but at the same time, is it being overwhelming and that close intimacy that Krishna was having and dealing with him, you know, in such a human way, then that was, you know, that was, it was, he was satisfied. So he left. Or he satisfied the sage who was silent, Munim, because of great surprise that Krishna worshipped him in that way. Right, so that's always the thing, is even though it's there, it's still surprising the Supreme Lord is doing all this, because this is what you're supposed to do. Like that. The Lord said, "It is certain that today the three worlds have attained freedom from all fear, for that is the influence of such a great personality as you, who travel at will throughout all the worlds. There is nothing unknown to you within God's creation. Therefore, please tell us what the Pandavas intend to do." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Krishna asks, "I am asking you about the welfare of all the people of the worlds, since it is improper to ask about your welfare, it being impossible that you could have any misfortune. Are the three worlds free from fear nowadays?" Right? So since you can't ask him, and he's such a great personality, the only thing comparable to asking him about his welfare is to ask about how's the whole universe doing. Like that. Narada asks, "Well, how should I know this?" Krishna replies, "Your great quality is that you wander everywhere, since from you knowledge of all the worlds can be attained, I ask you." Because he's saying, well, how would I know? You know, he says, no, because you travel around, so you see everything. You'll know how it's going. Right? Sri Narada said, "I have seen many times the insurmountable power of your Maya, O Almighty One, by which you bewilder even the creator of the universe, Brahma. O all-encompassing Lord, it does not surprise me that you disguise yourself by your own energies while moving among the created beings, as a fire covers its own light with smoke." Right, so that independent element, that the fire itself is covering its own light with the smoke. And that way then you can't see. It's not being covered by something else. Does that make sense? That's the whole point, is that the fire is what produces light. But at the same time, it's producing its smoke, it can cover itself, so you can't see it, not that something else can cover it. Right? Yeah. The BBT purport mentions, when Lord Krishna questioned Narada Muni about the intentions of the Pandavas, the sage replied that the Lord is himself all-powerful and all-knowing, even to the extent that he can bewilder the creator of the universe. Brahma, Narada understood that Lord Krishna desired to kill Jarasandha, and was thus beginning to arrange for this pastime by inquiring from Narada about the Pandavas' intentions. Right? Because then these two can be put together, as we said. Because otherwise, why do, you know, just separate things? You do one thing and it takes care of all that. Right? It's like the battle of Kurukshetra. It removed the wicked. It established Dharma. It was reciprocation with his devotees. It did everything. Like that. Understanding the Lord's own intention, Narada was not astonished when Lord Krishna humbly requested information from him. Right? Because he's saying, I travel around the universe only because I went there, I know. You are pervading everything, so you know everything. So you can understand the intention, because otherwise they'll say, okay, what should we do about these kings? Or the messenger will ask. And so then it's a matter of he'll take care of it by connecting it with the Rajasuya sacrifice. Right? Then everybody's taken care of. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes a much more interesting pastime. Mm-hmm. Sri Narada continued, "Who can properly understand your purpose? With your material energy you expand and also withdraw this creation, which thus appears to have substantial existence. Obeisances to you, whose transcendental position is inconceivable." Right? So, Srila Prabhupada explains Narada's realization in Krishna book. "My dear Lord, by your inconceivable potencies, you create this causing manifestation, maintain it, and again dissolve it. It is by dint of your inconceivable potency only that this material world, though a shadow representation of the spiritual world, appears to be factual. Right? So that's the whole point, is because it's Krishna's energy, and Krishna has entered it. That's why it appears that it's substance. Right? That's the point. It means that there's that the elements are there. That exists. And that, you know, they've been put into the various shapes and all that is there. But that those shapes exist and they have the potency to do what they do. And therefore, you can accomplish things. That's because of Krishna's potency. And so that's because of Krishna. So it has substance only because of its connection to Krishna. You don't connect it to Krishna, that's when we say it's illusion. So we'll say both. It's substance and we'll say it's illusion. It's real because it's Krishna's energy. It's substance because you see Krishna in everything. Mm-hmm. But it's also illusion when you don't connect it to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm? No one can understand what you plan to do in the future. Your transcendental position is always inconceivable to everyone. As far as I'm concerned, I can simply offer my respectful obeisances unto you again and again. The word sva, vilakshanatmane, also indicates that Lord Krishna has his own unique nature and characteristics. No one is equal to God or greater than God. So he has his own uniqueness, though, how he's going to take care. It means he has all the laws. But that's the point, is how do all these pastimes happen and all the variety? Because the application of the law has unlimited facets. Mm-hmm. Because the law has a principle. And that principle being maintained, you can get unlimited variety out of it. You know? So we see so many laws are there, so how much variety can you can get? It means you have seven notes in music and you can get unlimited music. So, what about when you have more laws than that? Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is that these fundaments being Krishna, then they can be unlimitedly manifest. So, the fun is he's going to work within these, but being a unique person himself, his own unique nature and characteristics, he will take care of it in his own special way. That's what's so attractive. We may take care of it in a regular, ordinary, boring way. You know, I mean, that's the typical stereotype, right, of the guy in the office. He goes every day, does everything exactly the same. Nothing changes like that. And so then life goes on. But here, Krishna, every time, does something unique and different. Though it's within the context of the rules. That's the thing. So we think spontaneity means you can't have rules. That's because we're not that smart. So actual spontaneity means you can be spontaneous within the confines of the rules. It's not about the rules, it's about the spontaneity. But it happens within that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right. Yeah? We're good? Okay. And Sri Narada continued, the living being caught in the cycle of birth and death does not know how he can be delivered from the material body, which brings so much trouble. But you, the Supreme Lord, descend to this world in various personal forms. And by performing your pastimes, you illuminate the soul's path with a blazing torch of your fame. Therefore, I surrender unto you. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. In the bodily concept of knowledge, everyone is driven by material desires. And thus, everyone develops new material bodies, one after another in the cycle of birth and death. Being absorbed in such a concept of existence, one does not know how to get out of the encagement of the material body. Out of your causeless mercy, my Lord, you descend to exhibit your different transcendental pastimes, which are illuminating and full of glory. Therefore, I have no alternative but to offer my respectful obeisances unto you. My dear Lord, you are the supreme Parabrahman, and your pastimes as an ordinary human are another tactical resource. Exactly like a play on the stage, in which an actor plays parts different from his own identity. So Krishna comes and makes how he'll reveal these pastimes. The material world, people, because of their material desires, they get entangled and it's just trouble for them. But Krishna fulfilling his desires, everything is all auspicious because he's the source of everything, why everything works in the first place. So therefore, since he is the source of things and he's the maintenance of the things, therefore the results gained from those, then that bringing pleasure to him, it will bring pleasure to everyone. But when we try to function outside of that, how can we be happy? There's the idea we'll be happy, but it's not so much. Just like we act in a criminal way, then there's always that fear. You know, our happiness can be short-lived, right? Because at some point the government may catch us and then there's a problem, right? So, therefore, the material consciousness is always going to have fear and problem. But Krishna, because he's the one that creates it and maintains it, therefore, what he does, because his plan of doing this is to include everybody. It's not that he does this on our own. We do things at the expense of others. He does things and includes everybody. So everybody can be happy. So like he says, another tactical resource. Right? Because the particular knowledge and skills and those things that he has, that can be used, you know, in his pastimes. But the point is he's pleasing himself. That's the strategy, right? Then you have the different pastimes that may come down. And that's your operational. And the tactical then is the particular elements that are there that you can use in this application. Does that make sense? You know, so you always have these levels of things. You have the knowledge and skills, right? That's the tactical. Then you have the endeavor and all that, or the application. That's your operational. And then you have the Lord's desire. That's the strategic. Does that make sense? So that's the origin of this. Does that make sense? No?
Yes.
Yeah. So we see is it comes from here, and it's mentioned. It's not something that's not known. So the Ichakri and Jnana Shaktis, these are the influence. These are what makes things work. That's why they function. So these things have to be understood. So we can see is that it's already been established by Krishna what's there. We just simply have to identify ourselves. So what's missing? Okay? I have the Sankarshan aspect that is there. I have the Vasudeva aspect, and I have the Aniruddha aspect. Right? And that the knowledge and skills, the application of it, the results that are gained to please Krishna. So what's missing?
The attitude,
Prajumna. So the desire to please Krishna. Because otherwise the skills just go on. So the strategic aspect of the strategic planning aspect of it, that's the secondary aspect. It gets particular results and these and that. But the whole point is that it must please Krishna. And that's only going to happen when we identify as a devotee. Does that make sense? So therefore, studying the material energy, no matter how nice the system you're using, we see this is the original system. But it has more to it than is being presented now, because nowadays people only want the secondary. Yes. And so then what is the ultimate goal is their own pleasure, and so they have the commitment for it. So they have the Prajumna and Aniruddha aspects in the taste that they'll gain is already their own. It's not included, therefore there's only three. So in the Vedic there's that four aspects. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So you have the attack, but you also have the attitude. That's never discussed.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then, for devotees, we should always start with Pradyumna.
Devotees always start with Pradyumna. Yes, that's how Prabhupada starts the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, is with Pradyumna. Because if you don't understand, I'm the servant of Krishna. That's why we start with, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. Right? The soul is the servant of the Lord. Then the ultimate goal is to please the Lord in prema. Right? So therefore, then, I have the proper understanding and all that of the process and all that, and I apply the process. So that's how he explains he uses the explanation in the introduction. Because that's the structure, how things work. Like that. But, you know, you'll never find that being used as the way to organize things. But that's actually the method. Because we see here, Narad Muni mentions. Okay. Right? So, we see here the instructions given by Narad Muni are the original self-help. Means when the self, us, understands the supreme self and that relationship and acts within that, That's the actual help you need. Mm-hmm. Everything else is a waste of time. Right? Sri Narada continued, "Nonetheless, O Supreme Truth, playing the part of a human being, I shall tell you what your devotee Yudhishthira Maharaj, the son of your father's sister, intends to do." It's great because he's taking it as that you're playing the part of a human being as if you don't know, so therefore in that I'll take care. Right? So he sees that because the nature of his rasa and everything, then he plays the part and he's very enthusiastic, but he also maintains him as the Supreme Lord. Well, you don't hear the Brajvasis ever saying this. Like that. They'll just interact. You know, they can know he's the Supreme Lord, but that's not why they're interacting. Does that make sense? So this is where the point is that Krishna and Vrindavan comes from Narayan. Does that make sense? Because being the Supreme Lord, in other words, the sweetness that's there in the Vrindavan pastimes, I can relate to it because Narayan is so great, he does sweet pastimes. Does that make sense? So there's no contradiction.
This is the Shri's philosophy.
Yes, yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. But it's the Vaikuntha philosophy.
Yeah.
That's all. O form of Brahman. Both Brahma and Brahman readings are correct as they are alternatives of the vocative case. Even though you know everything, I will let you hear Ashra Vaye. They always slow right here. Right? Well, this guy's actually stopping this. He wants to hear. Yeah, yeah. Or he wants us not to hear. One of them. Okay. So much for the hearing process.
A better spot,
okay. The pillar was getting in the way. So, okay. Even though you know everything, I will let you hear, Ashravaye, since you have the same qualities as an ordinary human being. Nara loka vidambhanam. This is an example of the ornament called contrast, vyakireka, praise of the Lord's expertise by citing low qualities of the human beings. Right, so they use this contrast.
Here he's saying that Naradoka Vidambanam. That means just as humans are confused, you know, even you are confused.
Yes, but that's the point, is that his expertise at citing the qualities of humans, how they function, like that. Yeah. Sri Narada continued, desiring unrivaled sovereignty, King Yudhishthira intends to worship you with the greatest fire sacrifice, the Rajasuya. Please bless his endeavor. Right. So here's the whole point. He wants to worship Krishna with this Rajasuya. He's not interested actually in unrivaled sovereignty. Yes. It's that the Rajasuya gives unrivaled sovereignty, and he's going to perform that because his father had asked. And now his father asking, now he wants to perform it because then Krishna can be invited and worshipped. Because we always have to remember is why did this Rajasuya come up? Because Narad Muni before this had visited Yudhishthira Maharaj. Mm-hmm. And in visiting Yudhishthira Maharaj, he had been around the universe, as Krishna had said, and he had been to Yamaloka, where the Petris are. And so there he met, Yudhishthira's father.
Pandu.
Pandu, yes. Mm-hmm. And so then Pandu said, you should do this sacrifice. Because then that'll elevate all of you and himself up to the heavenly planets. Right? Because now they're in, you know, the Petri Loka, which is a heavenly place, but it's not the same facility as in the heavenly planets. You know, it means that the 22 on the top of Meru, where Indra sits. Like that. Does that make a difference? It's all fancy, it's just not as fancy. Like that. And so then, having discussed that, and they've come up with that they're willing to do it, now Narada's come here to now invite Krishna. Right? Sri Narada continued. Oh, no, we said that. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments. Narada said, The Rajasuya is called the king of sacrifices because it makes one the king of the world. He will worship you alone by this sacrifice because, as a son of Pandu, he is your exclusive devotee. Because in that, you have to worship the topmost personality. And so, in this, he can invite Krishna, and then he can be worshiping the Supreme Lord is the process. Mm-hmm. So then it all becomes just part of the deity worship. Mm-hmm. Right? Krishna replies, I belong to the devotee. What is the use of a sacrifice? Right? Because he's your exclusive devotee. That's why he's doing this. But he says, I belong to the devotee already. Why do I need this sacrifice? You know, why is the sacrifice necessary? I already belong to Yudhishthira. Narada said, he desires sovereignty. By that, he can easily spread bhakti to you everywhere. Right? Because being king, then you can, that could be the natural influence. Or he desires prema bhakti, panama prestya, right? Because that is the supreme, when it comes to religious processes, then the king of kings is pure devotional service, right? Parameshtya. Or he desires Vaikuntha, nearness to you. Krishna replies, but he will attain that anyway. Narada said, he is lord of the people, Nidipatihi. He desires to go there with all the people. Right? Because he's going to go there, but by him being king, then he can influence everyone to take up bhakti, then he can take all of them back to Godhead. So we see this is how he's doing it. That's the whole point, is devotional service is the main thing. Management is simply something to support preaching. Yes. This idea that management on its own is going to make everything fabulous, you know, I say, management will make ISKCON great again, like that, is not reality. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. Desiring the wealth befitting you, Yudhishthira desires to serve you, who always comes to his house. By the Rajasuya sacrifice, the best of all sacrifices, which brings under control all kings and devatas, all the wealth is nothing for him without you. Mm-hmm. Right? So that will do that, but unless it's connected to Krishna, it's not going to be of value to him. Right? Did these things give joy to the king? Whose mind was only fixed on Mukunda, without deviation, nothing else. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:12.6. Ashina kaschane sakshad asane bhagavan iva. Parameshtya shriya jushtas stuyamanas cha vandibhi. Yudhishthira, the son of Dharma, was sitting just like Indra on a golden throne in the assembly hall built by Maya Dhanava. Displaying the majesty of Brahma himself, King Yudhishthira was being praised by the court poets. 1075-35. Okay, so that's coming up. Yeah, so it's interesting is how Krishna is in the Sudharma Hall, which is the demigods' assembly hall, and then Yudhishthira has the one made by Maya Dhanava. So they have basically, at least on this planet, the best that there is. Yes. You know, other than Brahma's one, there's nothing better than these. Yes. Like that. But as we said, that's more of a mystical thing, so it's not so much fit for humans. Narad Muni continued, O Lord, exalted demigods and glorious kings eager to see you will all come to that best of sacrifices. Footnote 38. The Acharyas explain that Narada here means to say that since all the great personalities will come, especially to see Lord Krishna, he should also come to that sacrifice, right? They're coming to see you, so if you come, it'll make it work. Right? You know? It's natural. But, you know, he's independent, but it's just, it will fulfill their desires. O Lord, even outcasts are purified by hearing and chanting your glories and meditating upon you. Okay. Yeah, our guy's not here anymore. Yes. Even outcasts, O Lord, even outcasts are purified by hearing and chanting your glories and meditating upon you, the absolute truth. What then to speak of those who see and touch you?
Mm-hmm. This sacrifice is the biggest one.
It's the biggest of all the sacrifices you can do.
And which means there are the most people seeing to the sacrifice.
That's there, most people are seeing, but also you see it includes the demigods and all the kings and everything. Well, other ones you can do locally. Like in Ashwamedha, then that's being done, but it's not that others need to be present.
Yes.
But here, everybody comes. It's so big. Everybody comes. You know, Krishna will be invited. So everyone will come. All the demigods have come. Everybody else wants to come because it's all happening like that. And because it's Yudhishthira, then everybody accepts his rule. So that's the point, is that he is unrivaled. Like anybody who is a rival, they've been removed. That's why the Jarasandha aspect. But otherwise, he's unrivaled. So that's the specialness. Because otherwise, Jarasandha, he's rivaled. People don't like him being the emperor. Mm-hmm. Right? And he hasn't become emperor of the whole world, only just his area. But we see as Yudhishthira becomes emperor of the whole planet. Like that. And it's even accepted beyond his position. Like that. Like we see some of the kings, you know, in the, I think it was 5th or 6th canto, they would go into Kimpurusha Varsha, the next one up, and these other ones, they could actually go there and see that things were going properly. You know, they were so qualified.
Maharaj,
yeah.
You know, this Rajasya sacrifice that is being performed is only for Bharat Varsha, not for the other Varshas, right? Like this.
This is for Bharat Varsha.
Means, is it that he is going to be the emperor of the Jambudvip and all the seven islands, or only Bharat Varsha?
Just Bharat Varsha here. Okay. You know, the seven oceans and the seven seas. But then you can also take that. Is that just here, or is that the whole Bhumandala? Because that's also seven oceans and seven seas. You know, but the problem is people with, you know, a wooden leg and a patch on their eye and a parrot on their shoulder aren't going to those other seven oceans and seven seas. Yeah, so. Yes.
Rajasuriya sacrifice, for example, Ashwamedha, they sacrifice the horse. Sometimes they sacrifice the cow in this one.
They worship who's the senior most in the assembly. Like that. So it means all the demigods haven't come there. So it means you get worshipped here. You're the top wall in the universe. You know. So then Krishna comes. So that's why he wants to. Right. So those who know, then they accept that. Those who don't, then they take him as a human being and as just another king and all this and that. But those who know, then they're quite happy.
And the other big sacrifices, they don't do that. Like they don't have to choose anybody.
No, it doesn't seem to be. You know, there's some uniqueness that makes it. That may be a simplification, but as what's brought out, this seems to be the essential point. Is that this worship of the, you know, just like in that ritual that Advaitacharya did, I think for the forefathers of that or something, what he did, and then you have the main plate, and that's offered to whoever's the senior most in that assembly. It's the same principle. And so he offered to Haridas Thakur, none of the others.
The
Shraddha ceremony. Shraddha. So none of the other, what do you call it? Brahmanas very much appreciated, especially because these are not just Brahmanas, these are Shantipur Brahmanas, right? You know, so, like that. So in that way, then it was very, yeah, but that's the same principle. So it doesn't seem to be that it's necessary in all the yajnas.
Here Acharyas are telling Yudhishthira Maharaj is specially calling everyone so that he can establish how Krishna is supreme.
Yes, that's his whole point. He just wants to. His enthusiasm is that it'll be there. Because Krishna says no, but you know he's already doing that. But by being some, he can take all those people with him in the process. So that's the only advantage.
It's a deep Krishna program.
Yes. So in other words, being in a position of authority, its only advantage is what influence you can have on inspiring others in bhakti. You know, so if it's either through teaching, through you know, the preaching, through the making proper arrangements and festivals and whatever it is that is there, is that's the only purpose to all these secondary aspects of knowledge and using those mediums. Is that if they're not used to bring people closer to Krishna, what's the point? Like Prabhupada says, you know, making the community, it's just to bring people, you know, closer to Krishna. You have a lifestyle that's favorable, and then by that association, they'll come closer to Krishna. That's the only reason. There's no other purpose. As soon as we get distracted by the secondary, that's when problems come up. Because then, however you do it, someone else does it differently. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so in the Vedic sense, it just works on authority. You don't have to worry about how everybody does it. You just use it according to what is given in scriptures. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Krishna asks, but what is the purpose in seeing me? Narada replies, even the outcasts become purified by hearing, chanting, and meditating on you, who are the form of concentrated Brahman. Brahma Mayasya. Sri Narada continued, my dear Lord, you are the symbol of everything auspicious. Your transcendental name and fame is spread like a canopy all over the universe, including the higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. Right, because they know him everywhere. Even on the lower planetary systems, no one dies there of old age. When it's your time to come, Sudarshan Chakra comes and takes care of things. Right? So they all know who Sudarshan Chakra is. Like that. So it's not that they don't know. The transcendental water that washes your lotus feet is known in the higher planetary systems as the Mandakini River, in the lower planetary systems as the Bhogavati, and in this earthly planetary system as the Ganges. This sacred transcendental river flows throughout the entire universe, purifying wherever it goes. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, what can be said? Those who see or touch you become purified. By your fame, the universe becomes purified and auspicious. O Lord, auspicious for the world. By your fame, the 14 worlds become auspicious. Or your fame spreads in all directions to make the world auspicious. What can be said? Your fame purifies. It is similar to the purifying power of water from your lotus feet. The word cha indicates that all the water on the three levels purifies, though of the three Ganga is most purifying. So they all purify because people take the most advantage of it. It's not that it won't purify, but here, then here as the Lord performs the pastimes in connection with the river. People take bath in a more religious fashion and all those kind of things. So that kind of aspect. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, so that's why you can refer to it as the Ganges, and it can mean all three. Or you can, as Narada Muni did, then separate and then tell the three names according to their position. But it's actually the Ganges.
Yeah.
That's what's coming.
Canto 5 mentions that it's Ganges who flows through the 14
Yes.
So these are the three names.
Yes. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, when his supporters, the Yadavas, objected to this proposal out of eagerness to defeat Jarasandha, Lord Keshava, right, because they were thinking, let's go defeat Jarasandha. Oh, you know, the sacrifice, you know, we'll take care of that after. First, let's defeat Jarasandha. Right, so that's why Narada Muni came at this time, before they had discussed. Otherwise, they would have already set their mind, and then you have to redo. And that's not an easy thing, you know, backing up Kshatriyas, you know, and then getting them going in a new direction. Right? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, when his supporters, the Yadavas, objected to this proposal out of eagerness to defeat Jarasandha, Lord Keshava turned to his servant Uddhava and, smiling, addressed him with fine words. The BBT purport mentions, Srila Prabhupada explains, just before the great sage Narada arrived in Sudharma Assembly Hall, House of Dwarka, Lord Krishna's ministers and secretaries had been considering how to attack the kingdom of Jarasandha. Because they were seriously considering the subject, Narada's proposal that Lord Krishna go to Hastinapur for Maharaj Yudhishthira's great Rajasuya sacrifice did not much appeal to them. Lord Krishna could understand the intentions of his associates because he is the ruler of even Lord Brahma. Therefore, in order to pacify him, he smilingly spoke to Uddhava. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the Lord smiled because he was about to demonstrate Uddhava's brilliant ability to give counsel in difficult situations. Right? Because being able to reconcile two opposing things into one thing, that's something very special, and Krishna very much appreciates that. That's one of the qualities he has. We see also Balaram. He goes and reconciles these things. That's how he went to take care of these things. And then we see is that Krishna also asked Arjuna to do that when you have the aspect of, you know, the question of Ashwatthama. So this kind of principle, and Narad Muni's, one of his qualities is known for being able to reconcile all seeming contradictions in the Veda. It means that there aren't any, but it's just reconciled, yes.
Like one of the devotees, he mentioned that Prabhupada defines maturity as, in order, reconciling opposing.
Maturity, the reconciling opposing positions. Okay, very nice.
I think Bhadrinarayan.
He said that's the
Prabhupada said to him.
He said to him, okay. Yeah, because otherwise you get down there and just argue with everybody. It's, no, you reconcile these things. So that's the thing that Krishna does, because he being the origin of everything, everything's reconciled in him, so it's possible. It's natural. That's the way things are. We who don't see things in connection to him tend to argue over details and see them differently, when actually that's all connected to Krishna. Yeah, good point. Thank you. The Personality of Godhead said, "You are indeed our best eye and closest friend, for you know perfectly the relative value of various kinds of counsel. Therefore, please tell us what should be done in this situation. We trust your judgment and shall do as you say." So now here you see is he refers to his main, you know, counsel as an eye. Right? Because it's about how you're going to see, how you're going to view, because then you'll get things done. Right? Does that make sense? Well, in general things, we talk about right hand, left hand, you know, we just talked about hands, you know, and getting things done. But that's the point is that, but how do you know what to get done? That's through the eye. How you see, how you perceive, how you understand. So that's the most important thing. And then he'll have so many people to help him accomplish that. You know, he has all these great generals and personalities there in Dwarka who can take care. Like you see Satyaki and others, they go out and they accomplish these things. Does that make sense? So above the hand of the king is the eye of the king. So we have to see is that generally in the modern context that gets left out. Or any materialistic context. We trust your judgment. Therefore, please tell us what should be done in this situation. We trust your judgment and shall do as you say. So there also, it's that you have only have persons that you trust their judgment. Now, if you find that their judgment's not working, then you may consider a new counselor. But the point is that the point of the counselor is that what he says is what you do. Otherwise, if what he says you don't do, then what do you need the counselor for? Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "You alone, he, are the eyes of the Yadavas, since you act for our benefit without personal motives, Suhrit, and know thoroughly how to give counsel. You are the best eye. More than the eye, you have the ability to see the future and distant places by mantra. For this reason, you should say which of these two actions should be done first. You should not say that your words will not be done. We will accept your decision with faith and carry it out." With great affection, he encouraged Uddhava to speak. Because otherwise you can say, well, I can tell you that you guys are bent on doing it this way, so why should I mention anything? No, he says, whatever you say, we'll do. Right? By Krishna saying that, everybody then has to listen to whatever Uddhava says, that will then happen. And because Uddhava knows his intention, therefore it'll work out nicely. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, "Thus requested by his master, who, though omniscient, acted as if perplexed, Uddhava took this order upon his head and replied as follows." Srila Prabhupada concludes in Krishna book, "It was known to Uddhava that although Krishna was acting like an ordinary man, he knew everything, past, present, and future. However, because the Lord wanted to consult with him, Uddhava, in order to render service to the Lord, began to speak." So he knows he knows. But to render service, then he does this. That's the point. If Krishna knows everything, so then what's the point? Where's the devotion to be expressed? So therefore, it's in pastimes that they're expressed. And what pastimes then can bring out the most opportunity for service? That of human pastimes. Like that. So that it's natural that that's the position, because that gives the maximum opportunity for rendering service. So that's why the human pastimes are preferred. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Devi.